हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम टू टुडेज मॉर्निंग भागवतम क्लास. सो टुडे इज गोइंग टू बी अ वेरी हिस्टोरिक क्लास, अ क्लास सो रेयर दैट इट हैपेंस ओनली वेरी रेयरली, वंस इन एवरी फोर इयर्स सच अ रेयर क्लास हैपेंस. ओके, we are reading canto sorry yeah the incense is very rare. Yes, so we're reading from canto 4 chapter 12. Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead, text number 27. Yeah, etad vimana pravaram uttam shloka maulina उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोधुं त्वमर्हसि एतद्विमानप्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोधुं त्वमर्हसि एतद्विमान प्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोधुं त्वमर्हसि एतद्विमान प्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उत्तमस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोधुं त्वम् अर्हसि एतद्विमान प्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोधुं त्वम् अर्हसि एतद्विमान प्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोढुं त्वम् अर्हसि. माताजीस् एतद्विमानप्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् उत्तरोढुं त्वम् अर्हसि. माताजीस् एतद्विमानप्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोढुं त्वमर्हसि एतद्विमानप्रवरम् उत्तमश्लोकमौलिना उपस्थापितमायुष्मन् अधिरोढुं त्वमर्हसि. वट् वर्ड् मीनिङ्ग् एतत् दिस् विमान एर्प्लेन् प्रवरं युनीक् उत्तमश्लोक द सुप्रीम् पर्सनालिटि आफ् गाड् हेड् मौलिना बै द हेड् आफ् आल् लिविङ्ग् एण्टिटीस् उपस्थापितं सेण्ट् आयुष्मन् O immortal one, adhirodhum, to board, tvam, you, arhasi, are worthy. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. Translation. O immortal one, this unique airplane has been sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is worshipped by selected prayers and who is the chief of all living entities. You are quite worthy to board such a plane. Purport. According to astronomical calculation, along with the pole star, there is another star which is called Shishumara, where Lord Vishnu, who is in charge of the maintenance of this material world, resides. Shishumara or Dhruvaloka can never be reached by anyone but the Vaishnavas, as will be described by the following shlokas. The associates of Lord Vishnu brought the special airplane for Dhruva Maharaja and then informed him that Lord Vishnu had especially sent this airplane. The Vaikuntha airplane does not move by mechanical arrangement. There are three processes for moving in outer space. One of the processes is known to the modern scientist. It is called Ka Pota Vayu. Ka means outer space. Pota means a ship. Vayu is air, of course. There is second process also called Kapota Vayu. Kapota also means a pigeon. One can train pigeons to carry one into outer space. Ready? Okay. The third process is very subtle. It is called Akasha Patana. This Akasha Patana system is also material. Just as a mind can fly anywhere one likes without mechanical arrangement, so the Akasha Patana airplanes can fly at the speed of mind. Beyond this Akasha Patana system is the Vaikuntha process, which is completely spiritual. The airplane sent by Lord Vishnu to carry Dhruva Maharaja to Shishumara was a completely spiritual transcendental airplane. Material scientists can neither see such vehicles nor imagine how they fly in the air. The material scientist has no information about the spiritual sky, although it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Parastasmat bhavanyo, right? 8th chapter, 20th verse. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shriyuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarur Vyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namun Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So welcome once again to the historic class. So today is called Leap Day. Right? And on this leap day, let us leap into a Vimana and go back to Godhead. Right? So it's a very, when you read statements like this, when you read purports like this, you're wondering, where am I? Am I in a spiritual movement or in one of those fancy modern cults? You're training pigeons to go to outer space. Have you gone cuckoo or what? Right? When you reach purports like this, sometimes I wish there are no new people in the audience today. You know, I'm going to get a lot of questions at the end of the class. Right? And when Balaram Chitraprabhu gave me this verse, I thought I can speak on the theme on going back to Godhead. And suddenly I read the purport only about Vimanas and flying pigeons into outer space, right? But we'll try to understand what Prabhupada is presenting here. So the signs of vimanas. So here there, Prabhupada talks about these three kinds of vimanas. First, he talks about the kapota vayus. This we understand. Like these are like physical spaceships that modern man is trying to make. Interestingly, there was this very controversial book. It's a Sanskrit book. It's a grantha, but it's a very modern revelation. Vimana Shastra, which became very controversial a few years ago when during the Indian Science Congress, people started quoting that and became like a big joke. You know, people talking about these ancient flying bodies and people started questioning, you know. And unfortunately, it was presented maybe not necessarily in a scientific way, and but more like, I don't know which format they were presented it, but it became a big controversy. Right. Apparently, this book was a very modern book. I think somewhere in mid-18th century or something, this book was revealed. Apparently, the seer whoever heard this book, he apparently heard from the sage Bharadwaja. Bharadwaja Muni revealed it to this person and he wrote it down or presented it. And later on, a very interesting Maharashtrian named Shivkar Bapuji Talpade. He apparently made a flying yantra, a flying instrument. This is before the... When did the Wright brothers make it? 1905. 1901, right? Exactly. See, we have our bark scientist here. So 1901 was Wright brothers, but 6 years before that, apparently... But it didn't fly like the Wright brothers' plane. It took off. And apparently, it uses one of those techniques mentioned in that Vimana Shastra, which uses mercury vortex engine. They are using that mercury when exposed to sunlight, it creates some kind of a hydrogen gas, which is so light. So he filled bamboos. He made a bamboo plane, filled it with a lot of mercury, and when the hydrogen was released, it took off. Went up to 1500 meters above the sky, above the ground level. And then crashed. Nobody was inside. It was an unmanned plane. 1500 kilometers, 1.5 kilometers. That's quite a big distance, you know. So it went up and then it crashed. So, right. So there are different kinds of vimanas. Even the vimana technologies also used to deteriorate with passage of time. Apparently, in Treta Yuga, people would elevate through mantra power. Right, so in like our Pushpaka Vimana of Ravana, Kubera's plane, which originally Vishwakarma made for Brahmaji and Brahma gave it to Kubera and Ravana stole from Kubera and finally came to Lord Ram. Right, so that was activated by mantra power. Then later on in Dwapar Yuga, they started using the power of Tantra, ability to control subtle matter. And that's how they made flying planes. Then... the third type of winds, which is what we use in Kali Yuga, they are known as Kritaka or artificial or mechanical ways of flying. And that's what we are seeing today. Pure gross matter is used to create the thrust, right? And apparently the Shastra talks about 25 variations of Mantra Vimanas, 56 variations of Tantra Vimanas and 25 varieties of this Kritaka Vimanas. And one, this mercury vortex engine machine that I told you is one such Kritaka, the mechanical ways of doing this. Because today we cannot activate through the yantra power, tantra power or the mantra power, right? Yeah, so even in the yogic science, these are all still the mechanical ones. So this pigeon, let's clarify the pigeon. So there are flying pigeons into outer space. So in the yogic tradition, we know about the Ashtangas, the eight Angas of Ashtanga, right? So then in the Antaranga Yoga begins, the inner yoga of Dhyan, Dharana and Samadhi. At a very advanced stage, the yogi, when he perfects this Dhyan, Dharana and Samadhi, now while the external Angas, Yama, Niyamas are all distinct Angas, but Dhyan, Dharana and Samadhi, you cannot exactly separate these three stages. These three stages are very internal, so they are almost in the same stage. at their advanced stage of practice, they find a sense of balance in all these three, dhyan, dharana and samadhi. Such stage is called as samyama. And at that state of samyama, the yogi starts developing some siddhis. And that samyama means that equalness or oneness of your internal space. And in that oneness, whatever the yogi meditates upon, one starts connecting with that object very strongly. So if one starts meditating on the air, one develops the lightness of the air and starts levitating. When one starts meditating on the sun rays, one starts walking on the sun rays. This Akasha Patana technique which Prabhupada talks about, Patana, walking on Akasha in ether. So the Saptarishis, you will hear sometimes description, the sages just walk down, or you know. So what they do is that they meditate on the sun rays. They use the sun beams of the sun rays as their celestial pathway. And they literally walk on that because of that samyama stage. And likewise, so that is the advanced stage. Basic is levitation. Advanced is sun ray walking. In between, intermittent stage is the pigeons. Pigeons or any bird, what happens is they transfer their consciousness to that particular bird or an animal or anything, and they experience, so they actually go into flight. They are sitting there in the trance, but then they transfer their consciousness to, say, for example, that bird there. So then suddenly it's like their camera has become that bird. It's like their GoPro action cam is sitting on back of the bird, and as a bird is flying, whatever the bird sees, they are able to see. I mean, they literally, their consciousness transfers into that bird. Even in the Buddhist tradition, this samyama concept is over glorified. You'll see this, and anything that has that mystic voodoo style, people, it becomes popular overnight, right? So because humans are not happy being themselves, they always want to be something beyond. So these such things become sensation, and right? So yeah, but I mean, when you hear all these kind of descriptions, such fascinating descriptions in the scriptures, right? Vimanas and flying pigeons, right? Of course, one is to understand them. That's nice. Prabhupada gives the deeper intent behind why, what should we do with all such information? In the famous statement in the 15th chapter, 6th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, when natat bhashyate shuryo na shashanko na pavakah, when the description of the spiritual world is given, Prabhupada writes that statement that how one should be captivated by this information. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. So when you hear such fantastic descriptions of spiritual world and such kind of advanced, it should allow, because many times what happens, we limit our awareness and our consciousness to this ethereal reality. And if you cannot look beyond and think beyond, you will never aspire beyond. So such information should give you, should fascinate you, should captivate you, because you desire where your heart is. If your heart is in the world of gadgets, your desire will be with gadgets. If your heart is in the world of food, then your desire will be food. Right? But if your heart is captivated by such information about the spiritual world, you start desiring also about such things. Right? And there are, even among, so therefore you'll see this in the Vedic literature, this concept of storytelling is such a powerful tool used to help the conditioned mind to get captivated. Right? And even among the various stories, stories of departure are always fascinating. Right? Because they are talking about something, stories about afterlife, stories about what happens during death, stories about beyond death, you know, the spiritual world. Such stories are so captivating because we do not know what lies beyond. And the chit potency of the heart, the sat chit ananda chit, as in the cognizance potency, which is so limited by the worldliness, always wants to know what lies beyond. And therefore, such subject matters are so fascinating. Right? But then, is it just a story to just, you know, help captivate the mind and go beyond, you know, kind of like distract you from the mundane so that you focus on the spiritual? Or is there some element of truth behind any of this? Is it just some fancy myths? Or is there some element of reality to it? Right? And this is the part which is very important for practicing devotees to really understand and internalize. Is all this description that we are reading in Bhagavatam, all these fancy planes coming and, you know, Jaya Vijaya coming or Nanda Sunanda, I think, yeah, Nanda Sunanda coming in this context, all of them coming. Is this real? Right? Are all this description, are the Vedas itself real? Right? Sometimes people ask this question. Other day, Mahabhagavat Prabhu, after his class, he was saying this. You know, when earlier, it was very easy, even to Indian audience, to talk about stories of Ramayana and Mahabharata and use that as a bridge to help them connect to transcendence. But today you cannot even use that bridge because people have, even after the entire class, people walk up to him and they were asking him, Prabhuji, this Ramayana and Mahabharata are real, is it? I mean, Ram really existed? Or Krishna really existed? Even Indian audience, you know, are asked. So it's very difficult to use even that as a bridge anymore, right? So if, and then you see on the other side, scripture is only talking about statements like how the transcendence cannot be described. It is anirvachaniya. It is adhokshaja. No word from atuksha can ever describe it. It is yadyat nirukti vachasam. The dictionary cannot describe the transcendence. And then the same scriptures are describing the transcendence, right? How is it that they are able to do this? So we have to understand that these descriptions are not ordinary. They are not somebody's pigment of imagination, but rather this very information is there all around us as this divine cosmic sound, the paravak. And these devotees in their advanced stages of either a yogic trance or a devotional heightened state of ecstasy, this very meaning got revealed to them. When we say that the Vedas are eternal, right, and then Vyasdev wrote it, he says, how can you write something which is eternal? If you wrote it, then it came. There's a point of beginning. Then how can you say something eternal came into existence? Right? So it is eternal in the sense that this very meaning existed right from the beginning of creation. This very meaning is the absolute truth. And that absolute truth was revealed to these enlightened masters, to these acharyas. And they have very mercifully given us these explanations and these words through the Smriti Vakyas. Right? And why did they give us? Because the special potency of these words is these words can resonate with the deeper consciousness and can help you to also realize it. When Prabhupada, in the purport to the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, he would say that this Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. So we are not forcing this data into you. We are not creating a forced worldview onto you. When you read the scriptures, we are not forcing people to believe that yes, there a Vaikuntha exists, a Goloka exists, a spiritual exists, these airplanes exist, the flying pigeons exist. You have to believe it. Otherwise, you are a sinner. We are not forcing any worldview onto you, but this fascinating detailed description that Sukhdeva Goswami is giving is actually an impetus for you to go into your deeper states of meditation. When you meditate, you need something, an object of meditation. So we have so much of, we are so many things that we unnecessarily meditate upon. Bhagavatam is giving us such beautiful, you know, subjects to meditate. And by meditating, what happens? that soul which has memories of all these, because the soul originally was there. It knows these vimanas, it knows the description of the spiritual world, it knows how Vaikuntha looks like. But unfortunately, we have forgotten these memories. And by reading about these and by internalizing these lost memories of the souls will be revived. Deep down somewhere in our unconscious mind, our unconscious awareness, it's an oxymoron, unconscious awareness. If you are aware, then you are conscious. What is unconscious awareness? Right? So, let's just call it as memory of the soul. Right? Soul exists. It is there. It is aware. But right now, in this conditioned state, conditioned by avidya, we are unconscious of it. In that unconscious awareness, you cannot access these advanced information. But by giving these little triggers, your unconscious awareness opens up. And suddenly, it gets revealed to you not as, again, information, but as a revelation translating into deeper conviction. Because at this stage, all of this may sound theoretical, but when you look at Prabhupada, when you look at his life, you know, when I remember once his owner, Bhakti Rasamrita Swami Maharaj, he was explaining that what inspired him when he read Prabhupada's books. Because he's a very well-read man and he had been there, done that. But when he read Prabhupada's books, he said that I could experience the conviction of this author. He was not saying that maybe it is like that, maybe the absolute truth could be like that, this could be a possibility. No. Prabhupada's statements are like conviction. Yes, flying pigeons. Any doubt? Right? Of course not. We are not restricted to flying pigeons alone. But the beauty of the spiritual world, the existence of a whole spiritual kingdom, right? Where everything is self-illuminating. And simply by chanting Hare Krishna, you can access, your consciousness will resonate at that level of reality. And all of this will get revealed to you. Right? The conviction with which you would talk about the Sambandha Abhidhaya and Prayojana of Bhakti, right? That convinced him. And this is what we are trying to imbibe by these teachings. And when we try to read this information, this should become, like I said, our seed of meditation. Because the more you visualize it, the more you internalize it. So create a painting for yourself when you're reading Bhagavatam. Visualize how that Vaikuntha Vimana has descended. Visualize how Dhruva Maharaj is walking into it. Visualize how the death personified came. But then Dhruva Maharaj stepped on its head, his head, and stepped into the Vaikuntha Vimana. And when the description of the spiritual world comes, visualize all of that. Right? And believe it or not, this is what we anyway do. Because the nature of the human consciousness is that we believe not in words and information, but in visuals. Right? When I use the word apple, immediately something red appears in your head. You cannot avoid it. Because the nama immediately has to convert into rupa. Right? And apple will not remain apple. With that apple, probably the taste of the apple will also come to your mind. So the rupa has to convert into gunas. And if you probably have deeper meditation and experience, probably the time when you climbed an apple tree and broke your leg when you fell down, your leelas also will come into your head automatically. So the gunas will naturally translate into leelas. This is not anything artificial. This is a very natural progression of the consciousness. What we are trying to do is spiritualize this transformation through spiritual nama, rupa, gunas and leelas. And these descriptions, when internalized, they trigger that. In our yoga course, we use one such powerful technique, right? We run this course called as a Yoga Nidra, wherein because how the subconscious mind works is, you know, the nature of the false ego is, it likes to always defend itself. We create multiple defense mechanisms at physical and mental levels. Right? And moment anything threatening comes to your body, right? Suppose if I have to touch fire, I immediately defend myself by pulling it back. That's how my nervous system, my parasympathetic nervous system works, right? I immediately respond. It protects me that way. Likewise, even mentally, we have a very strong defense mechanism. Moment anything threatening comes to you, what do you do? Yeah, freeze, fight, flight, right? The modern psychology uses these words, right? But how Vedanta psychology, you can understand it is that your mind immediately creates a defense mechanism. That either you respond back through fighting or you just deny it. Nigraham kim karishyati. Right? You kind of like deny that or suppress that. Now, this defense mechanism may seem apparently like you're protecting yourself. But what happens is, you have not addressed the cause of that insecurity. And as you keep defending all your life, these insecurities, they go deeper and deeper into your subconscious mind and they become a part of you. They become a part of your nature. And changing that is so difficult because even if you try to change it, the strong defense wall will not allow you to go past it. And that is where meditation comes. When you meditate, what happens is you're trying to relax your mind, which means you're trying to relax this defense mechanism. So when you meditate, what you're trying to do is when your mind relaxes, you are allowing yourself access to your subconscious mind. And then, whatever insecurities that you sowed across multiple lifetimes, you get access to it. And you can re-engineer your subconscious mind, not by deleting things, but by impregnating positive data, positive impressions. Right? And that is why when you hear, you know, even in our japa seminars, we hear that, you know, japa is not just about chanting, but chanting eventually with, invest your consciousness in it. Start praying. So prayer is that resolve that we are impregnating in our subconscious mind. And along with that prayer comes, at an advanced stage, certain feelings. Right? And that is what we are impregnating in our subconscious mind. Jai Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Bhairi Bhagavan Ki Jai Shri Gauranga Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. But all of this will not happen if we are not meditating properly in the first place. If you are allowing during your japa, if you are allowing your mind to keep wandering, allowing your insecurities to take you on a ride, you are only strengthening the wall. You are not allowing the wall to melt. You cannot break the wall, you can only allow it to melt. Right? And so that's the reason why being very conscious in your japa helps you to actually relax the mind so that you can go deeper into your subconscious. And then when all these descriptions of spiritual world which is there in the Bhagavatam, when it is there, you know, it will, you are sowing the seed of spiritual consciousness. And when that seed starts growing from your subconscious mind, it also starts manifesting in your conscious mind. And slowly you will see your levels of awareness increase. Right? Bhagavatam talks about this. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavatam, in the sixth canto, fourth chapter of Bhagavatam, in the Hamsaguhya prayers, it explains what is the state of the mind where these higher revelations take place. He says, Yadyoparama manaso, yad Uparama. Uparama means to stop, to cease. So in that state of trance, Uparama, yesterday Prabhuji was teaching this chapter in Vidyapitam. Uparama, when the cessation of what? Manaso. When the mind ceases, what is the mind constantly disturbed with? The Nama Rupas, the material names and forms. When the mind stops, when mind ceases this, its infatuation with the worldly names and forms, right? Drishta Smriti Sampramoshat, right? So then appears So this material vision, which is constantly filled with this material names and forms and the remembrances of that, right? When these are destroyed, sampramoshat, then ya iyate kaivalya sva samsthaya. So then in that stage, in that spiritual state, sva samsthaya with his own original form reveals what? Hamsaya tasmai suchi sadmane namaha. The supreme personality of Godhead, Hamsa, another name of the Lord is Hamsa, who is supremely pure. That supreme pure absolute truth is revealed in that state, which is beyond the state of Jagrita, Swapna and even Shushupti. In that state of Turiya, the state of trance, Jagrita means wakefulness. Swapna means dreaming. And Shushupti means deep sleep. And even beyond the deep sleep is the state of Turiya, where the practitioner, at that stage, the Supreme Lord is revealed. And all this reality manifests before you. That reality is there right now around you. You are sitting here in the spiritual world. Later on, Parapatsha Prabhupada talks that these temples are non-different. They are the spiritual world. Right? They get revealed to you. And only in such a trance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto that Supreme Lord who is seen in that uncontaminated transcendental state. Because the mind is right now contaminated, we are not able to perceive this higher reality. Right? I think I quoted this once and I keep quoting always in our classes, in our yoga school. When we did this course for the first time, this Yoga Nidra course. Yoga Nidra is where you allow the mind to relax and you go into that state somewhere close to Sushupti. Right? You go beyond Jagrata and Swapna. So when I was doing this course, what basically you do is you allow the mind to relax and then you give some external visualization inputs. You know, just random inputs. Because these random inputs are there in your subconscious mind. You just, by giving that input, suddenly you bring it out. Like when I say apple again, your apple will be different from his apple and his apple and her apple. Because each of us have our own picture of an apple in our subconscious mind and we're just bringing out what is there. So, all our stored impressions, when we bring them out, it helps us to kind of like address them properly. Otherwise, they are there as a suppressed bad or good impressions and they trouble you in your wakeful state. So, when I was doing this course one time, there was this one French Mataji who was there as a student. First time she came to India, never ever interacted with any kind of a spiritual organization, right? And when we were doing this course, just prior to that, she had some kind of a longing in her heart because she was very close to her grandfather and somehow she was not there by his side when he was dying. So that last desire was left in her heart where, you know, she could not meet her grandfather. And that kind of pain was there in her heart and she grew up with that pain. And somehow once in a while that came and that affected her in her other parts of life. So when we were trying to do this course, she understood this course and she kind of like said, okay, maybe. So what we do in that course is we teach the whole technique and then we say, now you engineer your own script and you record your own voice and you give your own guided meditation session to yourself. So they listen to it and then they do that. And she gave certain visualization inputs. So what ended up happening is that she gave herself inputs. And first you relax yourself and in that state of relaxed state, she gave inputs like forest, temple, monk. And as soon as she said monk, she said she saw a saffron clad monk. Now, saffron monk, easy. I mean, in GV, anybody who's walking around GV will see so many saffron monks. So I thought it's just an impression coming from her conscious mind. It's still not subconscious mind. Then she said, when I called out to that monk, when he turned, I saw a big, bright, red color sindoor. She didn't use the word sindoor. She said, one big red marking. In fact, what happened is, after the class, she was so excited, after the session, she was so excited, she said, she started saying, hey, does anybody here wear red mark? She thought maybe some senior swamis do that or some elevated masters do that. She says, does anybody wear red mala? That's not our tradition. There's a whole tradition called the Shakta tradition where they do that. In our tradition, we wear this kind of marking. And then I asked her when she was saying this narration, so did you ever see that marking before? I said, no. In fact, her first destination was GV. Not even Mumbai, because she came late night and in the night she drove to GV straight. She didn't see daylight in India anywhere other than GV. So no possibility of seeing any other spiritual place. Then when I was surprised, okay, then I said, go on, what happened next? Then when she said that marking, and you know who that monk was? My grandfather. And she had a long conversation with her grandfather in that state. So whatever her inner pain or issue was, that she was able to resolve because she got her last meeting, and symbolically she kind of like addressed her issues in her subconscious mind that way. And she felt a great sense of peace after that session. Right? And so this is what we are talking about. It may not seem rational or anything, but this is what the Dhamsaguya prayer is saying. This is still your own subconscious mind. We are talking about spiritual reality here. Even in the Sushupti stage, you can access that subconscious reality. But what about the description of the spiritual kingdom? That is what Bhagavatam is giving us. What will take us years and years of realization, the book, the pages of Bhagavatam is presenting us. This is what happens. This is what you will experience in a state of trance. Right? And so while this particular verse of Hamsaguya prayers is talking about Uparama Manasa, you have to stop the mind, kind of like what Patanjali also says, Chittavritti Nirodha, stop the mind, right? But however, the next verse gives a very interesting alternative. So Prabhupada calls that previous technique as easy technique. Controlling the mind and stopping the mind is very easy. There is a more difficult technique. What does he say? Save mamesha vishesha maya nisheda nirvana sukhanubhuti. So this variety that you are seeing in this world of maya, right? The same nama rupas are also there in the world of maya. They are also taking different names and forms, right? But sa sarva nama sacha vishwarupa. By seeing that all these names and forms, they are all coming from Krishna, from that one absolute truth. Even the Vishwarupa, looking at this big gigantic creation as this macrocosmic creation as that one big absolute truth. By seeing that everything is there, like just like how fire is there in the potential for fire is there in fire, in firewood. When you ignite it with fire, that fire comes out. Likewise, the potential for absolute truth is there, everything in this world, in this world of matter. So by seeing that potential of Krishna, the highest absolute truth in this world of matter, and by anirukta atma shaktihi, by seeing them all, these are all different energies that are connected to Krishna, by developing that vision wherein I am now engaging with this world, not out of my ego, but by seeing everything as connected to Krishna. And with that consciousness, when I learn to engage with matter, that is a more difficult technique, but a more powerful technique. And Prabhupada in the purport, he simplifies that, saying that way to see everything in relation to Krishna, he says, now the form with qualities, the most difficult thing is described. However, the pure devotees, by the process of prema bhakti, extract the Lord who has entered the heart by the process of hearing and is hidden there. By developing, by Shravanam, by hearing Krishna Katha, by hearing Bhagavatam, by hearing entire Bhagavatam, one develops that prema, that love in the heart, wherein one cannot not see everything's intrinsic relationship with Krishna. And in that stage, one naturally enters into a state of trance, as what we saw Dhruva Maharaj doing here. By all his austerities, by all his prema bhakti that he practiced, he was able to transcend this worldly limitation, the veil of the three modes, he was able to lift the veil of the three modes and look at everything in that spiritual vision. So that's when he started seeing the world completely different. And in that state, he could see the spiritual realities happening right here. The Vaikuntha Vimana came. He could see spiritual entities welcoming him, right? That is the that higher state of self-realization, where while here, you are able to access a higher level of reality. And then, why is this process of hearing Bhagavatam and purifying your consciousness a more difficult process? It seems like controlling the mind is more easy, more difficult than hearing Bhagavatam class, right? Hearing, all you have to do is sit here and, right? But why Prabhupada is calling that easy is because the techniques of mind control are very mechanical processes. Karma yoga, dhyana yoga, jnana yoga, they're all very procedure oriented processes. You have to control your mind, you have to control your intelligence, or you have to control your senses. You can do it by force. But the problem with bhakti yoga is you have to surrender your false ego. And that is the most difficult thing to do. Easy to control body, mind and intelligence or train them. But very difficult is to surrender. And when that surrender of the ego happens, that is when suddenly a whole different reality appears before you. It is not an intellectual process. Suddenly, a deeper sense of conviction comes in your heart. All it takes is that one moment of surrender. And His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, how he would mention that famous statement, that bhakti is a process of moment-to-moment surrender. It is not that it's one-time surrender, done and over. But every moment, you are scaling higher levels of surrender. And just like how Krishna is Ananta, unlimited, your surrender also has no end. Mind you can control, a point will come where you will end your mind control. Intelligence, you will master the intelligence at one level. Physical dexterity, you will master it at one level. There is an end to it. But then what? But the process of surrender is this unending ocean of love. And Krishna is inviting, through these stories, he is inviting all the conditioned jivas, come, swim with me in this unending ocean of love. There is never an ending. The more you surrender, the more you will discover. And the more you discover, more you will surrender. And then the more you will discover. Right? And that is why Dhruva Maharaj is described as the greatest yogi. Because, not because he was able to see the Vaikuntha Viman, but because what is coming in the next few verses which you will hear from tomorrow's speaker. Because Dhruva Maharaj, even in that stage, what does he do? Oh, my plane is here. Okay, guys, see you losers. All you sages sitting here in Badrikashram. You've been meditating. Look at me. As a five-year-old kid, I already saw the Lord. And now, not only did I see the Lord, I went back. I enjoyed kingdom. I enjoyed all the opulence. I had kids, family, wealth, opulence. And again came back and again mastered my life. And you guys are still sitting here. He actually went and begged permission from those souls who are not liberated. That is his humility. That shows how much free from false ego he was. So what the wonderful description that you will see after this verse, in the next, I think, four or five verses, talk about his expression of humility. That is the hallmark of Dhruva Maharaj. That is why we are reading this chapter. Not necessarily about flying pigeons, right? But what led to him see the flying pigeons is his surrender of the false ego. And so please join us tomorrow for more such descriptions of Dhruva Maharaj's glories. So these are just few thoughts I wanted to share. Are there any quick questions or comments? Jai. Thank you very much. Rantraj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Anand Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.